Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the meditation class. Today I'd just like to mention a few of the basics about the mind and meditation practice, because I've had a few people asking the same sorts of questions, and usually these are the sorts of questions we ask when we first start to meditate, but sometimes it's good to be reminded, because after we've practiced for a while we might be encountering the same difficulties or the same disappointment, the fact that the mind still isn't doing what we want it to do. So the first thing is to remember that the function of the mind is one of its most important functions is to think. Just as the function of the heart is to pump blood. And so we have to be aware of the fact that thinking is going to happen. And it's going to happen right up to the point where we are absorbed in one object only. So the strategy is not to fight thinking or to think that there's something wrong with us because thoughts are coming in, or that we've got to get to the point where we can hold thoughts out of the mind, because then we just get into a struggle and we actually arouse aversion in the mind as we hate the thoughts that are coming in. So that's the first thing. Just if you think about it, it's a simile of the mind. Thinking is like the heart pumping blood. What we're trying to do through our skillful means in meditation practice is to become familiar with what gives rise to thoughts in the mind. And basically we see that when we come in contact with objects through the senses, through the eye door, the ear door, the nose door, the tongue door, the touch door, and also through the mind door in thinking, that gives rise to thinking, the thought. A thought that goes with that contact. Could be a happy thought or an unhappy thought. It could be pleasant or unpleasant thinking. But it's through contact that the mind comes into operation. And if there is nothing happening through the sense doors externally, then through the mind door and memory, thinking, those objects will come into the mind. Thoughts about something that happened before, thoughts about something that might happen in the future. It's the nature of the mind that it cannot be like a vacuum with nothing in it, nothing happening in it. It has to have an object. So again, it is natural that the mind will have an object, and that if there's nothing happening externally, that something will arise from our memory bank or something that's going on internally that is not visible to others, something that a gurgle in the stomach which tells us we're hungry, something like that. Oh, and then the thought comes, gee, I better make sure I don't miss dinner tonight. That sort of thing. So the mind can't be without an object. And so part of our skillful means and what we're trying to develop is, first of all, to know the nature of the mind is like this, and the nature of thinking is like this, and to start to become selective about the kind of thoughts that we entertain. Thoughts that help us, that make us happy, that are wholesome, that lead us in a good direction, they're the thoughts that we're trying to entertain and make grow. Thoughts that lead us into misery, lead us into unwholesome speech and behaviour, into areas that make us miserable, or sad, whatever it is. We're trying to identify those sort of thoughts and replace them with wholesome thoughts. The analogy is that it's like feeding the mind, like we feed the body. When we eat food, we have to know what is good for us and what is not good for us, what is healthy and what is unhealthy. And even when we've identified that, we know that sometimes we go off the track and we eat junk food or things that we know don't suit us. Even if they suit someone else, we know we're allergic to them or too much of them is not good for us. And from time to time we indulge in those things. And the body can handle that as long as we're basically eating well, having a good, healthy diet. But if we only eat junk food, then eventually it's going to undermine our health. So just as we take trouble to know what's good for us and what's not in what we eat in terms of physical food, we have to know what's good for us and what's not good for us in terms of what we feed the mind. So if we are worried about something and we know that worrying is going to undermine our mental health over time, then we have to recognise that we have to be very cautious about how much we indulge in worrying. But to think about something so that we can address a problem or plan for something that needs to be planned, those are times when we realise, oh, well, this is something that I need to do. This will help me not to worry about that when I've planned it and I know what I'm doing. Now, this seems very obvious, but this is where people can very often find that they don't really know what they're trying to do in their meditation, because thinking doesn't stop just because we sit down to meditate. And if we have unrealistic expectations of what we should be able to accomplish, that we shouldn't have any thoughts in the mind, that we should be able to stop all those thoughts coming in that we don't like, then we're going to be disappointed at the least and probably in a battle with what is happening. So when we are meditating and when we become familiar with what's happening, the practice is actually to keep replacing unskillful thoughts with skillful thoughts. Not trying to barricade the mind against those thoughts coming in, but once we recognise this isn't healthy or this is enough of this sort of thinking, the way to deal with it is to replace it with a skillful or wholesome thought. The mind can only hold one thought at a time, so if we replace the unwholesome thought with a wholesome one, then the mind is occupied with something that is good for it. But of course, we recognise that moment after moment, the mind will change. And so we have to keep doing the work. We have to keep doing the replacing. We have to work with patience and persistence. Not battling the mind, not battling the thoughts, but simply recognising this is the nature of the mind. If we don't do this, and if we don't have this wisdom, this understanding of the mind, what we will take the thoughts that enter the mind to be self and to be true and to be something that we have to act on. If we feed the mind the same thought again and again and again, it becomes easier for that kind of thought to pop up. Whenever there's nothing in the mind, that's the thought that will pop up. And particularly if we're in a miserable state, if we're going through difficulties, those miserable thoughts will enter the mind more often and more easily, and they will stay there. And we will take them to be the truth. We will take them to be me. We'll take them to be all that there is. And I'm saying this because a number of people have spoken to me recently about exactly this situation, where they find themselves bogged down and their mind is leading them really up a dead-end track. How to deal with it? If we understand the nature of the mind, in this very basic kind of understanding, then we recognise what's happening and then we have a strategy to deal with it. The simile that I've been giving to these people is that it's like if you've got an empty jar and you've got a whole array of coloured balls that you can put into the jar. If you choose to put mostly balls that are blue colour and you put one or two white balls and one red ball into the jar, every time you put your hand into the jar, it's more likely that you're going to get a blue ball. And you put it in again, you get another blue ball. You put it in again, you get another blue ball. It's very unlikely that you're going to get one of those two red balls or one of that one white ball. You're just going to get blue all the time. And you think, this jar's just got blue balls and there's nothing else but blue balls in this world. Now, if the mind is fed the same thought over and over again, a miserable thought, a thought that is full of emotion, and if you keep indulging in that thought will be like the blue ball in the jar. It just comes up more easily each time the mind has nothing else to occupy it, because that's what you're feeding it again and again. And then we start to think, this is the only thought in existence. This is my life. And this thought is telling me the truth of my life. And this thought is telling me what I need to do in my life. This blue ball is all there is. If we understand how the mind arises, we understand that it's simply because we're feeding the mind that blue ball, that thought, again and again, that it's making it easier for that thought to arise, and it's giving that thought the credence of being the truth. And then people can do all sorts of silly things because they think that's all there is in the world. Now, in order to change the thinking, we have to stop feeding the mind that particular thought. So with our mindfulness, we don't fight that thought. We just become aware that thought is present and that it's not a healthy thought. It's not a wholesome thought. And then we replace it. And especially if we've had a jar full of blue balls moment after moment, day after day, week after week for years, which is what people have had, then it's going to take time and patience and perseverance to change the colours in the mind. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not that we're not doing the practice right. It's not that it's not working. We just haven't realised what a job we've taken on. We've got this whole jar full of balls that we have to gradually remove and replace. So we've got to find white balls to put in there, red balls to put in there. So then we have to actively cultivate those other wholesome thoughts. So we look for ways to develop the kind of thoughts that will bring us a better outcome, a healthier outcome. And one of those thoughts is just simply mindfulness of whatever we're doing while we're doing it, wholehearted attention on whatever is right in front of us. So watching the breath in the meditation, when we're walking, fully being with walking, filling the mind with walking, the experience of walking, the movement of the legs, the touch of the sole of the foot on the ground, when we're doing any activity, fully with that activity, not half-heartedly, half our attention on that and half our attention on something else. This is the way we start to create the alternative thoughts to bring into the mind. And gradually over time, we change the balance in the mind. This is the wisdom aspect. This is the wisdom part, the theory, if you like, that goes with the practice of just being aware, being mindful of one object. The one we use most often is the breath. simply resting our attention on the breath, staying focused on that. When the mind moves away, we come back to pay attention to the breath. And we keep on doing that throughout each practice session. And we'll find sometimes it will bring peace into the mind, and sometimes we spend the whole of the session just bringing the mind back to the breath, resting with the breath for one moment, and then the mind wandering away. But don't judge the practice by just one session. You've got to realize this is work over time, a cumulative effect, a cumulative result. You can't take out all the blue balls from the jar in one go. You can't fill it up with new balls in one go. You have to work with it over time, again and again. But if you understand what you're doing, then it all makes sense. So now we're going to start with meditation. And if you have any questions about the theory, then after the meditation there'll be time to ask questions. So please make yourself ready for meditation. So one of the ways of practicing so that you have something to put into the mind instead of thoughts that are unhealthy is to cultivate the ability to pay attention to the body and how it feels. That's another reason why at the beginning of every meditation sitting, it is always useful to spend some time bringing your attention into the body, feeling the body from the top of the head to the tips of the toes, relaxing the body, which is an act of loving kindness, going through the body systematically again and again until your attention is focused in the present moment, not with what happened yesterday or what's going to happen tonight, but this moment right now. This very simple, basic practice is something which is a wonderful support for finding peace when the mind is running riot through thinking. When you're moving your attention through the body, the mind is likely to wander away. So it's the same as when you're paying attention to the breath. As soon as you know that the mind has wandered, you simply let go of the thinking and come back to the body. Continue moving through the body until you've gone through at least once from the top of the head to the tips of the toes. As you move through the body, you might discover places that have quite a lot of feeling with them, either pleasant or unpleasant, tight or painful areas. And it's always useful to spend a little bit more time on those areas, just resting your attention there and observing what it feels like and how it changes as you observe. This allows the body to relax at an even deeper level, and in turn helps the mind to relax into the present moment. Once you've moved through the body, then you bring your attention to the flow of the breath. Allow the attention to rest with the flow of the breath. Breath in, breath out, one after the other.
Thoughts may become like shadows passing through the back of the mind. If the mind has become peaceful and relaxed, be aware of that, but do not allow your attention on the breath to become slack. At this time, the mind can easily sink and lack energy. And the way we keep the energy is to keep our attention focused on the breath. bringing your attention into the present moment. Be aware of your meditation object, what you're paying attention to, and also how the mind feels at this time in the meditation. Now gently allow the attention on the breath, allowing the breath to move into the background of your awareness, and allow the feeling in the mind to become the object of your attention. The breath moves into the background and the feeling in the mind comes into the foreground. Experiencing it directly without thinking about it, analyzing it, just experiencing the feeling in the mind. Basic description of the feeling is pleasant or unpleasant. Allowing that pleasant feeling in the mind to expand to include the whole body, from the top of the head to the tips of the toes. Filling the whole body from the top of the head to the tips of the toes. And then expanding the awareness beyond the boundaries of the body to include the whole room. The ceiling, from the ceiling down to the floor, out to the walls and everything in this room. The awareness and the pleasant feeling expanding to include the space of this room. and everything in it. And then bringing your attention back to your own physical body, to the boundaries of your own body. And once more, filling the whole body with that pleasant feeling. From the top of the head to the tips of the toes. And taking a moment to appreciate the effort that you've made in the meditation, however the meditation has been for you, if the mind has been busy thinking or sleepy, doesn't matter. If a pleasant feeling has arisen, that's good. But however it's been for you, invite into the mind a feeling of appreciation and goodwill, of loving kindness towards yourself for having made the effort to come this afternoon and to practice meditation. And extending that feeling to everyone here who's made the effort to come and practice, be part of this group, supporting each other. And bringing that feeling back to yourself, feeling of softness, kindness, friendship, and allowing that feeling to remain with you as we come to the end of the meditation. If anyone has any questions, please feel free to ask. Yes. The question is, my mind often feels like it's filled with water in meditation and daily life. So, first of all, it would be to explore what it feels like when it feels like it's filled with water, because the idea that it's filled with water is basically a concept. So it would be to find out exactly what that feels like. So to pay attention to the different feelings or sensations that are there, how it manifests that you then think it is like water. So how would you describe that feels? What is it in it that makes you feel it's like water? Like it's filled up with something that's not clear. Okay. So you're saying, is that a visual image or is that a feeling? Okay, so it feels swampy. So the thing in meditation practice, it's very good to try to get beyond the concepts to the actual direct experience of it. And so at the beginning of the meditation, presumably it feels more swampy than it does after you've meditated for a while. So that would be something that you could then pay attention to, particularly in the meditation. When we first start off and we go through the body, you would go... The other thing that I often suggest is that people pay attention to the quality of their mind at the beginning of the meditation, because sometimes people will find their mind is very speedy, very jumpy, very one thing after the other, can't sit still, or it's very dull and heavy. That sounds more like you're talking about. So you start to observe how it is at the beginning of the meditation and how that feels, and then you go through the body and observe that as well in the same way. And the kind of mind that you're working with will affect how accurately you can observe what's in the body and how present you are in this moment. So if it's a swampy sort of mind, it's probably a dull mind, and then it's harder to accurately feel different parts of the body, or you may not even be able to feel lots of parts of the body. And when you feel it, it'll be in a very sort of gross way, not very clear or subtle. And so you start to get to know the qualities of this mind, how it affects your ability to think and to perceive things. And as you practice meditation with mindfulness, trying to observe in the present moment one thing at a time, and trying in the meditation to work to stay focused on one thing after the other, it will. One of the results is it naturally starts to clear up that fogginess in the mind. But you have to get to know the fogginess first and how it affects the mind in the meditation and in the daily life situation. So getting to know it directly and the effect that it has is a way of strengthening mindfulness, because you're not just swimming in that mind, you're actually observing that mind. And observing it is already strengthening the ability to observe it, which is already helping it to clear up.
So basically, the meditation becomes a really good opportunity to do that if you're already dull or it feels like it's full in daily life. It probably is too difficult and not wise to try and give the mind something else to do, that is to observe itself so closely when it's already stretched trying to do what it's got to do. So the thing at that time would be to try to pay attention to whatever you're doing with your full attention, one thing in the mind at the time. Because very often that foggy mind or that thick mind or that unclear mind is a mind that's been run ragged by trying to do too many things at once, not ever doing one thing fully in the moment. And so it's trying to contain too many things, and you've got to empty it. So the meditation practice of just being on one object moment after moment gradually empties the mind. And then it's like letting the water out of the swimming pool or the bathtub, it all goes down the gurgler, and then it's free and spacious again. The heaviness in the mind can also be related to what we're feeding the mind. Just as we know when we're eating food, some food leaves us feeling really, really heavy in the gut. And some of the things that we expose the mind to have the same effect, that they sit heavily on the mind. And it's for each of us to start to explore the effect of the different contacts with that have on the mind. So as I said in the beginning with junk food, if you eat a little bit of junk food, it's not going to have a big impact on your health. But if you feed the mind, feed the body only junk food, then eventually it is going to take its toll. And it's the same with sense contacts that are to do with stimulating the mind. They have an effect, and the more you do repeat them, and if you don't give the mind a rest, then they have a more lasting effect. So we need to take a look at what we're feeding the mind and see what effect it's having and how much of it is good for us and how much it takes us over the boundary of what we can really sustain in the mind, contain in the mind. So things that make us feel really miserable can make the mind feel really heavy, for example. Things that really stimulate desire can make the mind feel really jumpy and twitchy. Of course, desire is constantly being fueled, sort of jumping on to the next thing or reaching out for the next thing. No contentment or stillness there, peace there. So it's for each of us to start to investigate what affects our mind for our betterment or our detriment, for our peacefulness or our unhappiness. So if there are no more questions, please, if you'd like to, continue to meditate here, and I'll be over in the reception area if anyone would like to speak to me individually. Thank you. If people would try to leave quietly in case anyone wants to stay sitting in here. There is still a class going on next door, so please don't start speaking until you get to the reception area.